The file you are listening to is an audio commentary by some of the Starship Excelsior production staff, not a real episode. We regularly produce this kind of bonus content, but we only include the most recent one in our official feed. If you want to hear the others, visit starshipexcelsior.com, click episodes, and scroll down to Behind the Scenes. It's not paywalled or anything. Thanks for listening and enjoy!
Good evening, good morning, or good afternoon, depending on where you're at in the world. I am Mike Hennessy, and welcoming you to another podcast with my friend and the creator of Starship Excelsior, James Haney, as we're going to be going over another one of our episodes here and throwing in our commentary and making all sorts of pertinent comments about what it went into the making of this episode. James, it was a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks for having me once again, Mike. Thanks for organizing this.
Organizing is the key word, isn't it? We won't tell anybody why that's a chuckle. We are going to be taking a listen with the premiere of season two, the first two deaths, which is a part of the sequence called Murders in the Blue Morgue. And I really think this is a very important episode for a couple of different reasons, not just program-wise because of the critical way it introduces what's really going on in the story, in the story arc, but also from a technical standpoint, just how much better these productions are becoming.
Before we get started, I want to give a shout-out to fan Jim Chappell, who jumped into the Starship Excelsior, a fan group on Facebook 3 weeks ago, and said, just wondering if there's any chance of another commentary episode coming out while we wait, because the wait for The Witness, the next episode in the main series, has been interminable and horrible, and trust me, I'm as frustrated about that as the fans are. Mike and I had not talked about it at all, so it was Jim who said that, and we said, hey, we should do that. So thank you, Jim. You're the reason this is happening.
Yeah, or maybe you can get the blame. One of the just depending. But again, that's inside baseball. We won't go into what actually went into getting this program done. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to start rolling on my end, James. If you'll start rolling on your end, let's see here.
When you are.
Okay, here. I have this ready to go. I am going to punch, and we'll probably be pretty darn close to each other as to what we're listening to.
How it usually works.
And so we will start rolling in 3, 2, and 1. Okay.
Or may not. Is yours running?
It was running, but it was running in the wrong place.
Uh-oh. All right. Well, let's try again then.
Okay. So let's give her a go here.
I am back to 0000.
Okay.
And then we can have Dovan saying, did it work?
Okay.
It didn't work.
It did not work. Okay. Here we go.
Which may hold or it may not.
All right. Okay. Let's try it again in 3, 2, and 1.
Did it work?
Yes, yes, it did.
No way of knowing, sir. The jury rig may hold, or it may not.
This is a good bit.
So, I'll take that as a yes.
Of the episode.
Yeah. I think is that our first episode where we actually did a cold open?
It might be, because we had the intro to the pilot, and we had, and then in the first episode, we had a captain's log, and then we had recaps for the rest of the season. So this one we just jumped in. Yeah, it was our, and it's the characters in without no setting, just kind of bantering. It's some of their first basic Dovan Lorok banter that we ever get. I enjoy it. It's a good minute. The technical production here is really nice. I still don't know exactly how. I want to say Jim or Gary did this. But I don't know. Maybe it was you, Mike.
I might have done this one just simply because radio, all the st- static and everything like that might have been able to do.
It's nice. It's really well put together. Like many things in this episode, I think, though.
Yeah, like this I said, this is...
You think I'm about to say something, but I'm about to say something quite different, in a very different direction. Like a lot of things in this episode, the cuteness of this sequence is covering the fact that there's nothing going on.
Thank you, Commander.
This is actually my least favorite episode of the whole series, which is why it was interesting to me when you said before this, that when we got going, that you were really very happy with this episode. And I think there are a lot of reasons to be happy with this episode. I think you're right about it. But it doesn't overcome for me the fact that I don't think it's good.
One thing I do like is that we got our first introduction.
I just looked up the production record. You did this scene. You did a great job.
One of the things that I liked here is that we get introduced to Admiral Athos Parker.
Oh, yeah.
And
he had a cameo in the pilot, but mm-hmm. now the pilot is hidden on our website, so no one ever hears it anyway unless they go looking for it. And this is where he really comes in full force.
Yeah, and I like him because he is... he's one of these guys who rides the roller coaster as far as whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, or is he one of the corrupt jerk admirals, or is he a hero? Because at various times he plays all of the above, and I think that's really, really makes him interesting and a well-rounded character.
I love him. I have a great soft spot for him. He is so officious.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear that right away in this episode. You don't have to call me sir. Call me Admiral.
Yeah. You know, what a guy. He's, you know. And why did somebody want to punch him? We won't spoil that one. I will say that somebody did punch him, but you have to listen to all the episodes to find out who it was.
I'm sure he had it coming.
No doubt he did.
He was thinking three steps ahead and was like, I gotta get this guy out of here. Well, make him punch me.
Yeah. Well, he might have been. He might have.
He usually was. Sometimes it doesn't, you know, work out for him. Admiral Parker was being introduced, what was it, 2008?
Mm-hmm.
So he was portrayed by, and it still is today, portrayed by my best friend at the time and still today, a friend of mine named Nathan Lisney.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done a great job, given that he has no interest in acting and is a quantum physicist in real life.
How about that?
I mean, he wasn't at the time. He was a freshman in college at the time who was trying to decide between a physics and a music major, but still comes back to do Excelsior stuff for us.
Well, we appreciate it very much.
Yeah.
And I guess you've also got somebody who can tell you, we need to reel it back in. This is a little too unrealistic. has he ever done that to you and said, that just can't happen?
My character would never do that. No, I have people who yell at me, who say that to me, and they always get special thanks in the episode credits.
Mm-hmm.
People who tell me this is a terrible idea, don't do it. But for the most part, actually, very few of the cast come to me and say this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Larry does sometimes, and I value that.
Such as.
So if any of the cast is listening to this, you can come to me and say this is wrong for my character, and I will listen to you.
Well, Larry is really good. He identifies very well with Dovan, and I think he's got a very, very good handle on the character. So, whereas somebody who just maybe parachutes in and starts that might get a different reception. But I certainly agree with you that if Larry were to speak up on a script that I had written and say, no, this doesn't work, and I would say, okay, Larry, what would work?
You'll be hearing the result of some of those conflicts. We had in the next, not the next, the next episode is The Witness 6H. The one after that, which we just started recording, which is why it's in my head, is called The Speech That Lies at the Center of His Soul, which is a very long title, but it's not quite as long as For the World is Hollow and As For I Have Touched the Sky, so I still feel like we're all right. Larry wrote the first draft of that and the inner story, and I wrote an outer story around it. And we had some very interesting give and take on what it's Dovan's story, and it's like, all right, well, what happens? What should be happening to Dovan right here? What is he feeling? I guess that's useless to you because you haven't heard the episode and you can't hear the episode. nothing to talk about. The point is, Larry cares. You can tell he's a fan of the character. He's a fan of the show. He's not just an actor. He's really invested. He writes well. He gets the character. And really, Dovan would... I had a different sort of direction in mind for Dovan when I cast Larry originally. And Larry himself has changed that trajectory over time through his portrayal and through his writing. He's been a huge asset to the show. And I don't know that he gets enough credit for that because he is, you know, an actor and actors are cattle.
I like this. This is a nightmare sequence of the idea that a bullying can have nightmares that leave him in a cold sweat at night is kind of an interesting one, I think. But sometimes there's exposition. There's exposition that you just can't get any other way, and I think that's.
I mean, we could. Kind of, I think originally this episode just started with a big dump of here's what's going on the ship, and it was so boring.
Yeah.
So this was better.
You have something for me?
I'm afraid.
Although
so,
this is also this is one of the last episodes. Season two is the season where we transition from. This is just a straight transcript of what we did in the role-playing game to this is vaguely inspired by the role-playing game but isn't closely married to it. And season two is that transition moment. So some of these scenes are just lifted straight from the role-play and others are original.
Now, this is interesting because we start hearing both Emily as Dr. Sharp and Caitlin as Ubriasca starting to mature into their roles a little bit.
Yes, they were both so little when they started.
Yes, and you just from where they were first introduced to where they are now, you can really hear that they are much more at ease playing their characters, and they sound mature enough not to be anachronistic.
Yes. I remember one of the early complaints we got on the forums was, and that actress behind Dr. Sharp sounds like a 14-year-old girl. And I'm like, that has to be well, a mistake. Edison is a 14-year-old girl. spot on. But, not the case anymore, obviously.
Well, yeah, we went from having to, and it's not because any of our actors didn't do a good job and didn't earn their roles. It's just one of those things where, we didn't have a great universe of people to pick from.
No, I was pulling people out of, you know, one of the guys, David Robbins in this episode, is a friend of mine from school who heard I was doing this and really wanted a part, Alexander Valentine Keyes, and his microphone was garbage. He's a fine actor, but his microphone was so bad. But it was like, well, he's the guy who's willing to do it. He's doing it. He's got the part. Now, of course, you know, we got like a 3-year waiting list for parts. It's a good problem to have, but I did like being able to just say, hey, you want to do this episode, you can do it. I'm sorry, I'm talking too much, Mike.
No, it's okay. Again, I see what your reservations about this episode because there's just an awful lot of talking.
Yeah, there's nothing pulling it forward. It's, I thought when I wrote it that it would be really cool to have it like be kind of slow and build up to the big bomb at the end. But what I forgot is you're not going to get to the bomb at the end if you're bored to tears in the first 25 minutes. Ooh, it's a cool bomb. And it is a cool bomb. And that bomb sounds great. But you got to get there. And until then, there's just these little hints and suggestions and exposition and, like you said, talking. So much talking.
Yeah. And, but again, we get to hear Admiral Parker. And again, everything that Admiral Parker does here does help understand what his character, where he fits into the whole picture, I think.
By the book. Good guy.
Mm-hmm.
By the book.
Mm-hmm. And getting, I think this is the last time we hear the opening speech being given by Captain Cortez, is it not?
I think we get her for two more episodes because we'd made the decision not to spoil the fact she was going to die. But it is increasingly funny in retrospect as you're listening to it, like, oh yeah, well, here's Captain Cortez in the opening credits. She's never coming back. She's not in this episode. She's dead. No, she was in the nightmare sequence.
Yeah. And maybe that, maybe we can rationalize that by saying that it helped to maybe increase the shock value when it does happen that we realize.
I mean, you don't want to just say this person's out of the cast until her character is dead on screen. Kind of a spoiler.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that Sam Gillis wrote our theme song, which I'm astounded to this day that we found somebody who could do such good, quality composition.
God loves Excelsior. That's the only way I can explain all the talent, including you, that has stumbled into our lap over the years.
Well, I'll tell you, it is amazing what we've come up with, and as we'll hear later, General Brahms, our good friend, comes up, and Julian Bane. Will you talk about somebody falling into our lap?
Oh yeah, and then no one else taking him out of our lap is the real crime against Julian, but it's a blessing for us.
Yeah, that. It is a caution. Anybody who wants to get into acting should understand how good Julian is and how tough it is to make a living as an actor. Because he's had to do a lot of different things in order to keep things together. And he is so good. And that was something I will take credit for. I didn't recruit him, and I didn't make the choice to cast him. But I remember hearing from a pilot episode, just the very last little Easter egg ending, and saying, this guy is just so good. You know, I mean, somebody slipped a ringer in. And I also served as assistant chief engineer. Our late great pal Michael Lieben, whom I still mourn today,
as you should,
had the loss of him, and we start getting introduced to Alex Roll here.
There's an actor who was willing to yell at me.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly, what he yelled at me was get back to the mines and work, make the episode.
Mm-hmm.
You lazy guy.
Yeah. Well, that's fine because we all need that, and. That's, but here, yeah, we see the wheels within wheels and within,
he's getting started.
You know, where does he really, where is he? Here's a guy, where so much of any television show or any drama is going to be black and white, where you got good guys versus bad guys. And here is a guy who really just lurks in the shadows and occasionally sticks his head out and lets something out and... And then he goes back in the shadows and it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's interesting because he says, I think he says in the scene something on the lines of, I never lie to you. And I think that's technically true. I don't think Rawl ever directly lies to Lorak. But it's real technical, and that made it a lot of fun to write Rawl. Because he had a lot of, mental reservations.
Yeah, he's somewhat... predated, well, actually, or did he postdate the character of Garrick from...
Oh, yeah. I was going to have crewman Harkless do the manual adjustments, but I think I'm going to go make them myself. You may go, Lieutenant. There are a few similarities. I don't know if that was ever conscious, but certainly I love Garrick, and I loved Garrick by the time I watched that I made Excelsior, or this part of Excelsior.
Yeah.
So.
And so you've got that character who's really ambiguous in so many ways. What is he? Who is he?
Yeah. I wish I still had him, just in the toolbox. I don't know what he would be doing in season 7, but I know he would be useful to have around just as an interesting guy to bounce things off of, working on shadowy things.
Yeah, and would he finally just toss in the towel and say, I can't be Brahms' lackey anymore?
I mean, we know he does, eventually.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But what would he be like after Brahms dies at Gevenon Prime? What would that have done to him? I don't know. I'd love to have found out. Double shift. Thank you, Seth. It's my pleasure. Ah, it's Christmas. The first concrete reference to what time it is in the show.
Mm-hmm.
You can pretty much calculate all the dates in Excelsior off of this reference to it being Christmas.
Also like to see you in my office this afternoon.
We have something to discuss.
Nothing is happening on screen.
Now, let's see about putting the Sizemore on screen, Lieutenant.
This is boring. You're bored, aren't you?
Well, yeah, there's just nothing. There's, again, it's talk. Now, I did like the conversation that they eventually did have once they got past everything else, because that one starts getting interesting, because you start saying, okay, you've got divided loyalties at work here, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Some hints about the Sword of Damocles, not by name, but starting to show up. But, oh my gosh, there's just nothing happening here. It's the worst episode of Excelsior, Mike. We've had episodes that failed, but this episode wasn't even trying. It was trying to build up to a bomb at the end.
Well, I like the overall name of the story arc. I like murder in the Blue Morgue.
Yeah, and there's a whole justification at the last scene.
Yeah, anybody who's read Edgar Allan Poe would have to like that.
Oh, yeah, that was Poe.
You know, the one good thing about this episode is it's not real long.
Yes. Not long in terms of minutes and not long in terms of scenes. 9 scenes, 43 minutes. We used to do that. Right now, The Witness is coming out, and one of the reasons that it's taking so gosh darn long to come out is I think it's 65, 70 minutes, not that long. But it's 29 scenes.
Yeah.
Lots of shorter scenes, and that just logistically makes it so much harder to get everyone coordinated, to get it done, to get the drafts out. There's so much more stuff going on in the scenes instead of just people talking.
Yeah, one of the things that we've gotten better at too, though, is matching producers and scenes. And we've had, and James has been very good. Yeah. Well, the thing is I've threatened him, don't give me any scenes with footsteps in them, because I hate footsteps. Because
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I hate footsteps because they just never seem to come out right. And it's just like, okay, well, why is this character entering stage left, but they're moving stage right? Or something like that. And it's like, you always want to tell somebody who criticizes you for that to get a life. You know, it's like, but, you know, maybe just to give you a little inside baseball, this, I do have some significant hearing impairments, and I have to wear hearing aids, and I just have a very difficult time picking up on these really subtle, nuanced things. And usually it works out okay, and I count on you and James to say, hey, look, we've got to clean this up. It's not quite right. The panning isn't quite right or whatever. But one of the things that I do like that we've started doing more and more of is when we've got one producer in one location for a scene that takes place, say, in a judge's chambers. There may be another scene later on in the judge's chambers, and I think it makes sense to have the same producer working that one, or say, like, it could be astrophysics or whatever, because a different producer may have a different idea for what should be the background noise, what should the computers sound like, what should the buttons sound like. So
yeah, and if you don't have the same producer, you've got to coordinate, and the coordination costs 2 weeks in itself, emailing back and forth
and say, yeah, how did you create this effect, you know?
Yeah. Computer. Can you give me that effect?
Yeah.
And cross-reference it against. Yeah. List all matches. Gotten a little better at that. Everything that could possibly go wrong on The Witness, though, has gone wrong. So I'm in a place of frustration and anger about all of our processes, and most of all at myself. I mean, like, one of the basic things. Basic things that no one in the audience is going to think, oh, I'll bet this caused a 3-month delay. But you know, and you know this, Mike. Cells, our line management system, is supposed to send emails whenever a line gets uploaded, whenever a draft gets uploaded, and whenever a draft gets reviewed, and whenever a recut is requested. 4 very basic automatic notifications to all producers. And it stopped.
That was extremely helpful. One last question.
I diagnosed it just last week, finally. I spent almost 2 weeks trying to fix it after it had been down for, you know, 9 months, because I was too busy with everything else. And I finally sat down and fixed it, and it turned out that our host, our increasingly terrible host, Host Monster, who was great to us 15 years ago, but I strongly advise you to stay away from them now, changed the way it servers represents its own name servers in email DKIM verification strings. And so everything our server sent was completely borked. And it was filtered out of spam by most email services. And recording. Logically, because our host screwed it up and has no way of fixing it and is not going to fix it. So now, Cell's emails will run through Gmail. I had to rewrite all the PHP code to make it do that, and now I really genuinely feel like that's going to accelerate production by like 2 months on the next episode.
I would hope it would help.
Because you're going to know when your lines are in, so you can start your scene. And I'm going to know when your scene isn't done, or when you've done the scene and it's time for it to be critiqued. And I'll get reports about that, and we can follow up and not just be like, oh, I thought that recut was done 4 months ago. No, I've been waiting for it, not doing anything. Sorry, Steven.
Welcome aboard the Excelsior, Admiral. Thank you for coming to our assistance.
Yeah.
Given that we're having this conversation in a metal tube connecting our starships instead of the view screens of our comfortable ready rooms, I have to say I appreciate the gravity of your situation, Commander.
I hope you'll forgive the small welcoming party. Our staff.
Yeah, we probably could have cut some of this stuff.
Yeah. It was all justified on me, like, oh, this is cool, right? Him coming aboard and being like, wow, your ship sucks.
Yeah. Oh, you're really a good cook, sir. Yeah, like he's going to come up there and say, boy, I wouldn't feed this to a Regillian bloodworm, or something like that. That's really, maybe the Klingons would like it, but I don't.
I mean, I guess question for the viewing audience, is Dovan being sincere when he says he likes the dinner?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Is he? What do you think?
I don't know, because that would be a little bit more of a suck up than he really.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like someone to lie about dinner.
Yeah, I think that he might.
He cares about food too much too. He loves food.
Yeah, he might lie about something unimportant, like why the ship blew up or something like that.
Actually, no. My real chief engineer is a junior lieutenant. My active chief is a non-com. I was referring to junior.
I will say nothing about that, only because it features so prominently in the next episode, obviously.
My people will respect
the ship having blown up and all that.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the last time that we heard the mention of Pachik Rota.
That might be the case. She'll need a small that might be the case. There may have been one more reference to him in like season 3, but he really, I mean, Pachik Rota does vanish off the face of the earth after this. It's too bad. Interesting guy.
Yeah, interesting character. The only problem that I could see, and I mean, this is in hindsight, it's not something that I recognized at the time, is you've got this guy who's basically omniscient. I mean, he's wired into absolutely everything and everyone.
A neat storytelling tool, but also a storytelling danger.
Yeah, because you can paint yourself right into the corner there.
Why wouldn't Pachik Rota know about the Sword of Damocles, for example?
Yeah.
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 But that problem was solved for us by the withdrawal of the actor and my unwillingness to recast in that case.
Yeah, just and that may be one of those things where it's just as well. I really, in a way, we could have done some interesting things with him, but I'm not really sure that there was any great loss here, as far as developing the story.
Yeah, it would have been had to be a very different development because so much of season 3 is premised on people not knowing things that they would really like to know. At the appropriate times. Everyone's always finding out 6 hours after they needed to know the thing that they really needed to know. And Rota would have solved that.
And then you have to decide who he's really working for. and that was never made clear either. And so,
Rota was working for Starfleet. He was working for himself. He just didn't understand the concept of privacy. He's like, why would we have this? What?
Yeah.
He didn't have an agenda. He was just interested. He was curious. He wanted to know what was going on. So he found out.
Yeah.
Hacked a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, as conversations go, I kind of like this one just simply because it really does help you to understand where Dovan is. And even though he doesn't want to be captain, you can see that he is willing to act as captain. He understands that until Captain Cortez comes back, he is the captain and he is going to act like the captain. And there are things that have to be done and roles that have to be filled. And it's nice the way he pushes Yubari here. Because it's like, what was she doing here? That was, which was a good moment from a previous episode, where it's like, okay, computer, find somebody who can run tactical. And it's like, yeah, there's this Yubari Asuka. Who the hell is that? Well, tell her to get herself up here. We've got, we'll worry about that later. And it turns out that she's way too good at her job.
Yes.
And,
I can't find a reference to Peter Grota in this episode in the script. I don't know
what
I'm doing. He's definitely mentioned. I heard it today too when I listened to it before this. It's there. I must have spelled it differently or something.
I think it's maybe in this conversation is where it comes up.
Maybe so.
Aha! There he is.
This is just one of more than two dozen camera devices he's found on the ship so far.
He's in.
Many of them were placed
no one is not alive.
In blatant violation of half
That's
a
his
dozen
last appearance.
Starfleet regs.
The regulations did Where I had forgotten that.
Yeah, he's on the 2372. He's on the hull when Hermes gets the waste not the wasting the phage. And it's the one scene, it's like two lines, but he's in it, briefly. I had also forgotten that, even though that was the last episode we did the commentary on. I wonder, because that was so late, I'm surprised Keyes, the actor, was willing to do that part. At that late. Whatever. Glad we got the lines. Glad we got the character. Hope the actor is also happy
now,
about that.
Will you please tell me more about your mission, or do I have to start filling in the blanks myself?
Yeah. Good work here by Dovan.
Yeah.
Because he gets...
He's still growing into the part. Larry seems to have it.
Yeah, and... Well, the nice thing is here, too, is that he... He gets almost too close, and then I think he kind of realizes it and backs off. He kind of says, okay, I've got enough information. You're good at the job. You take the job. We're good. We really don't have time to sweat small stuff, like who you're really working for.
It's interesting how Yubari does realize, does realize that like Starfleet Intelligence is going to be reluctant to let her go, but really has no idea how reluctant they're going to be to let her go. It's like, I do owe Brahm some solids. He's going to be cheesed off. And it's like, we've all been in that relationship where you don't want to quit a boss, but you want to quit a job to get a better job, but you're like, I don't want to hurt my boss. And she thinks it's one of those situations where she has to mollify, the boss she likes and make him whole. But in fact, he's going to kill her.
And it's like, just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in.
You couldn't get on the approved list if you were an SI informant.
100 years.
For 100 years, yeah.
And then, of course, the irony is, I was thinking about this while I was listening to it, Dovan ends up stumbling straight into the Sword of Damocles and becomes the next person on SI's approved list to know about it, because it's like, well, he knows about it, so we have to either kill him or live with it.
Yeah. And we don't have anybody else to run the ship, so...
And when Brahms is gone, they kind of are done killing people, although I think Hanas would love to kill some people. I think Hanas would love to kill Dovan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there's...
General Hanas.
Yeah, there's... There's plenty of people who wouldn't mind seeing him, have an accident with an airlock or not.
He's gonna get shivved in prison.
Yeah,
that's how the series ends.
Yeah, Yeah, spoiler alert. I mean, just gave the whole damn thing away. Congratulations.
The speech that lies at the center of a soul is Larry's last episode.
Yeah.
Not to put too fine a point on it, but
this yeah.
kind of offer doesn't come around often.
Yeah. Okay, come on. We've got the carrot dangling there for, you know.
Yes, it is.
It's too long, Mike. It's boring. There's no pull. What's the dramatic tension question to answer here?
Yeah. Well, I'll give myself credit for recognizing that later down the road when we did the tribute 50th anniversary tribute show. Because remember the first like 10 pages were dialogue or exposition.
Yeah, dragged. And in retrospect, it still dragged too much. But.
Yeah, it was still more than was needed, but
it was so hard to resist when you've got the actors
yeah.
and you want to do the fan service.
Yeah.
But we don't have the excuse of fan service here in season 2 of Starship Excelsior, where there are no fans at this point, as I recall.
Well, I'm saying that, you know, we were still at a position where we were learning as we went along. I mean, things that would have happened, this would have been a 15-minute vignette, maybe.
Podcasting hadn't taken off yet, though. I mean, there wasn't an audience. It was, like, the people who did darker projects, you know, their audience, which was, as I understand, quite small at the time as well, went, come and listen to us, and iTunes Store. But there was no podcast directory. There were no smartphones. I mean, the iPhone had just come out. But it costs $1,000 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So who was listening to us? As I understand it, about 200 people at this time. From
the wasting. The ones you've put in those do-it-yourself medical wards all over the ship.
Anywhere with yeah. fields,
and this is.
God knows we needed a lot of them.
Ah, there's Dr. Sharp again.
These are the files for the patients.
And you're right. Edison grew a lot over the years.
In a relatively short period of time. I mean, she sounded like a kid, legitimately, and here she sounds like a very sharp.
A kid,
yeah, and here she sounds like a very, very bright young idealistic doctor.
Which, you know, it helps that that's basically what Dr. Sharp's in-character biography is. She's a pretty young doctor who's mad about the Dominion War and is short.
Everything we've
so it lines up nicely.
The computer insists there was never any data there, but I've spent too many hours updating these files to buy
don't
that.
Know.
And you can see how painstaking our other records
Dr. Sharp, as we know, left the show in season at the end of season 5, and I'd hoped there would be a couple
really
more
need that data if we're ever going to get
short appearances, but I don't know if that's going to happen at this point.
Isn't there anything you can do?
I'm even thinking about recasting to get the Dr. Sharp character back in. I don't think I've said that to anyone in the world, and now I've just said it on a broadcast. But it's been in my mind the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would that be worth it? I don't know. I don't like recasting, especially with such an important character.
Yeah, the ship's doctor is one of those things where...
What ship? We blew up the ship.
Well, yeah, that's true. But she's a doctor somewhere, so what job would she have? And she's burned a lot of bridges in her time, so she wouldn't have been out for an extended... stint at Starfleet Medical.
I assume she's back at Starfleet Medical working on the wasting. There's still a couple of people in the, you know, 15 years after the wasting who are still in deep comas, who have never recovered, and she's always felt obliged to cure them. One of the reasons she's so gung-ho about this data in this very episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she's probably working on that. And there are things... Dr. Sharp is important because she has both this important sort of relationship to the wasting, which is not gone forever, and all these important character relationships. She's got a number of different relationships, different characters that are crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to just be like, well, she's gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir, Admiral.
But as for my ship, I don't know.
He tells me the trick is in properly preparing the essence of...
Yeah.
See what Edison says. Edison, if you get this, write me in my official email account.
Yep.
Won't talk about anything personal.
Yep.
Go ahead, Miss Masterson.
There's a message coming in for you, sir.
I think this is Jan Green playing Commander.
It is Jan Green.
Yes.
And Jan Green's first role?
I think so. Hi, sir.
Yes. Thank you for the everyone meeting. In this episode, whenever a message shows up, whenever they get hailed, they always say, message coming in.
I'll be right
and
back.
And that is because at the time I was playing Mass Effect 2 or 3, and every time you get a call in Mass Effect 2 or 3, the bridge calls you and says, "Message coming in for you, Commander," and you run up to the quantum communicator and talk to somebody.
General.
But I should not have let that leak into scripts, you know? It's just something I heard a lot, and it was stuck in my head, so it was driving me crazy when I was listening to this episode today.
Of what kind?
Well, that's the kind of thing that I... Okay, now that you mention it, yeah, I can understand where you're coming from on that. But at the same time, if you hadn't mentioned it, I...
You never would have noticed it. Oh, that's a relief. And there's our guy, Isaac. Yeah.
The sinister one. Yeah, how many guys hang up on Admiral Parker?
Yeah. People who are afraid that Admiral Parker is going to know who they are.
Yeah.
You know, a few years later, we do the Shakedown episode where it turns out that General Brahms knows who Parker is very well and is very annoyed at him and complains about him.
Well, he's got good company then, you know. It's,
yeah, that's true.
You know, Admiral Parker's...
Love
yeah.
the shit out of Admiral Parker, too.
Yeah.
It's hard to be an admiral.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and not to be just totally torn into so many parts. I mean, which is one of the reasons that I think that so many admiral characters just are not very satisfactory in Star Trek as a whole. It's just, they're just... doing things that are so unpleasant and unpopular, even if they're not just corrupted. You know, if they're just...
I never wanted Admiral Parker to be one of those evil, corrupt admirals from, like, the original series. I always wanted him to be... He's a good guy, but he's a good guy in a very narrow sort of way, if that's the right word.
Yeah. He will step right on you. I mean, if that's what he thinks is needed, he will... cut your throat.
Yes. He's not going to go and kill you. So he's not literally, like, because Isaac Brahms is way on that extreme. Isaac Brahms will literally slit your throat, at least at this point in the series, in order to make things happen. But and Parker stops short of that, as he establishes in season 3. But he will. Yeah, he'll destroy your career. He'll do whatever he thinks is best for the Federation. Mr. Robbins made a mistake on that. Well, respecting the Federation's ideals deep down. I think he's a real Star Trek guy. He does love the Federation and all that it stands for. But he's very pragmatic about it. And here you see him again, being a hero. Admiral Parker is clearly going to run into that fire and kill himself. And Dovan, of all people, is telling him to be less of a dumb hero. Like, you've got to be feeling a lot of feels for Dovan to be the one to tell you to stop having so many feels.
You're being an idiot, Admiral. Sorry. You know.
Yeah, great.
We'll talk again later.
Pot calling the kettle.
Yeah. Yes, sir. But it was a good explosion.
It was a great explosion. And that was scene 20108 by Jim Smigata, who is really... I would go as far as saying the king of Excelsior explosions.
Yeah, and
all our strengths and Jim's explosions. My goodness,
Doctor.
Ah, Mr. LaRock.
And between Jim and Gary Colbom, we really got two guys who really helped to elevate our production game.
No question.
They were erased, weren't they?
Some of the work I did has been good, but it was feeling my way around. I mean, I learned as I went. These guys were able to come in and really just know what they're doing.
Yep, learned a lot from both of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could make the show at this level now. Like, if I had a ton of time, which I don't, two children now, I didn't at this point. But, like, I am technically able to do everything that this episode does, and I was not at the time that this episode came out. That's because I've learned from them, I've learned from myself, I've learned from you. But I still thank goodness every day that we have the big team that we have that is able to do... even when I'm mad at them about, you know, The Witness, I'm still very grateful that we have everyone. Not mad at you, Mike. You did a great job turning your scenes on time.
And here we go.
Oh, wow, it's already over?
Yeah.
I must have talked a ton. It passed, like, so fast.
Well, you know, hopefully our banter was more amusing than the episode itself. Maybe the...
Excelsior's worst episode. Executive produced and adapted for audio by James Haney, co-producer. I don't know. Weigh in the comments. What do you think was the worst episode, listeners?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, isn't it? Because, I mean, we can pick the low-hanging fruit and say, what's your favorite episode? What's your least favorite? What do you say? Oh, man.
That would actually be quite interesting, I think.
That would be.
Ask that.
Yeah.
The fan group or something.
Yeah.
Obviously, it would be a painful experience, but I think I would learn something from it.
Well, I think the one thing that would always be lurking in my background is that what we think is the best wouldn't necessarily be the one that the audience thinks is the best, and vice versa. What we would think would be the worst, they wouldn't necessarily agree with us on that, which I think would be just an interesting thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that they generally agree with us on what the favorite is, because we've done that poll. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm with you there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think The Graceful End is my favorite episode, but it's up there, and I see why it is so many people's favorite.
Mm-hmm.
The least favorite. We so rarely get negative feedback, which is in many ways gratifying, but, like, you know, we get these little episode reviews on Spotify all the time. I send everything that we get out at the end of every year to the whole cast and crew, which, by the way, everyone on the cast and crew, I assume me including you, Mike, loves getting the feedback file at the end of the year.
Oh, I do.
It's so great. It's so gratifying. It's like 200, like 100 comments sometimes, maybe more, of just people saying all the things they love about Excelsior. But then, you know, I include the negative feedback too, but we get so little of it. It's like we can't actually use much of it to grow. I think our one negative comment last year was, I don't like this as much as during the Sword of Damocles days. And I'm like,
well, that's fair. That is fair.
The show has changed since then, and it's changed in some ways I really like, and in ways I can understand where you might not like.
Mm-hmm.
We are heading back in that direction in certain respects in the final season. It's going to be a lot more of a tight story, I think, in that last season.
Mm-hmm.
But we have been wandering around a lot for 4 and 5 and 6.
Season 2 picks up because our next episode, I think, really steps up. I think
it's slightly better than the first two deaths.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Let's listen to it and find out, because it might also be bad. I know that Her Hardest Shoe to Hold, the third episode, is good. I remember that. But I don't actually remember if episode 2 of this season is good. Maybe episode 2 is the worst episode we ever did. Or maybe it's better. I don't know. Let's find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. It's in due course. We'll put this one together. We'll put it out there. We'll let folks listen to our commentaries and see if they agree with us about the relative merits or lack of this.
And then we'll probably mix a new commentary the next time someone gets on Facebook and says, hey, it's been a while. Could you do a commentary?
Yeah. Well, maybe if we have to tap dance some more before we can release the witness, we'll...
I really hope. If this comes out, we're recording this, it's 12:04 a.m. Central Time on June 25th, 2024, and I am telling everyone right now it's going to be out within the week.
Ah, okay.
I'm really trying to get there. Jim is really trying to get there. We just have a couple of scenes left and a couple of outstanding lines left, and I am hounding the actors to get those lines. It's like, why are we still recutting lines in June? And I just told you all about cells being broken.
stuff that goes on behind the scenes. This is, folks, this is how the sausage gets made. And
badly.
Yeah, everybody loves to eat sausage. Nobody wants to know how it's made. And this is a little bit of a look behind the scenes in the sausage factory.
A producer slowly losing his mind. On a team of producers, I should say. We're all slowly losing our minds. It's not just me. We're all going nuts with it. Great. So I'm telling people this week I'm working hard on it. I know Jim is working probably harder than me on it, because I just took an hour to record this podcast when I could have been scoring. So I got to probably get back to the scoring lab. But this has been great.
All right. Well, thank you very much, James. We will We'll wrap this one up, and we will hopefully next time have a better episode to work with, or at least some more highlights and lowlights that we can point to, because unfortunately in this one there just weren't a lot of either one. It was competently produced, I will say that.
It was competently produced, and that is a clear change from a state change from the previous season. I loved your static bit at the beginning. I loved the bomb at the end. I loved the fact that I could hear everyone and there was no static on the lines in the middle.
Yeah, so there we go.
What more can you ask for? You can ask for a script. But you didn't get that from me this time.
Okay, let's let that one play out. James, thank you so much. I'll let you get back to the sweatshop, also known as the scoring room.
Also known as the mines, as Michael Liebman would call it.
Yes, absolutely. And God bless you, Michael, wherever you are. Thank you so much. All right. And thank you, audience. You're what makes this all worthwhile.
Yeah, that's very true. That is why we are here.
Take care, one and all. Bye-bye.
Okay, that went good.